The Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. He is the OG Rebel Capitalist, in fact. One of my favorites. He really needs no introduction, but his name is Doug Casey, the legend. Doug, welcome back to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Thanks, George, and I'm very, very sympathetic to being a rebel generally. Although, as you're well aware, I'm a freedom fighter. You're a rebel. He's a terrorist.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I was just listening to a clip from your recent kind of podcast or show that you've been doing, and we're going to have the editor flash that up on the screen. I think it's like Doug Casey Takes. It's basically your opinions on what's going on. So everyone needs to check that out. But one episode that I found very fascinating is where you dove into this thought experiment of what would happen if the United States kind of broke down into certain sections based on culture. And maybe even that could progress. Hopefully it won't, but maybe it progresses into a civil war. And then you gave the background of the first civil war in the United States, the Civil War. And it's very, what actually happened is quite different than what we're told in the history book. So I'd love it if you could dive into the history that you went over in that episode and then give us your opinion on today, what we're seeing in the United States. And if you think that we're going to, you know, what's going to happen in the next 10 years? Is it going to be multiple different countries? Are we going to have a civil war? I'd love to get your take on all that.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, nothing lasts forever. One of the very few laws that I believe in is the second law of thermodynamics, which states that everything falls apart over time. Everything winds down over time. And that's true of everything from the smallest amoeba to the largest empire. And I'm very sorry to see what's happening to the U.S., to see that it's coming apart at the seams, because this phrase that the U.S. is irreplaceable and unique, a lot of people say that, but it really is true. Although the jingoists that spout that don't know anything about history or philosophy. But in the case of the United States, it actually was, well, first of all, I don't say America is unique. The United States is just another 200 nation states that are covering the face of the globe like a skin disease. So let me make that distinction. America is a unique and a wonderful idea. But that's what's being washed away, and it's being replaced just by another country, of which we've got lots of them, and they come and go all the time. So what's happening right now in the U.S. based upon that is we're both well aware. The people in the so-called red counties and so-called blue counties, they hate each other. They really do. It is shocking. Wherever I go in the U.S., whenever I talk to another American, when you get into politics and you talk about what's going on today, it becomes acerbic. I don't think there are going to be a lot of pleasant Thanksgiving dinners this year, regardless of who wins the election on November 3rd. So, I think the United States is falling apart. And the best solution that can happen, the best thing that can come of this, is a secession where people that live in places like Oregon and California and Washington, Massachusetts, those places, secede and form their own country that's run their own way. But looking at what happened in the U.S. from 1861 to 1865, that's not likely for a couple of reasons. It's more likely we're going to have a civil war. So here I ought to talk about the so-called civil war from 1861 to 1865. A civil war is a conflict where two groups are trying to take over the same government and control the same country. What we had under Lincoln was not a civil war. It was a failed war of secession. And I think we're going to have a civil war this time. The only reason we won't is because, you know, half of Americans are on psychiatric drugs and are zombies, and half are living in their mother's basement playing video games, don't know what's going on. And the other half are morbidly obese, so they're not in a position to go out in the streets and be a street fighting man. But it's going to be ugly. And I don't see any way around it, frankly, at this point.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of stuff to unpack there. What do you think that would look like if California, Oregon, Washington separated into their own country? I mean, I just see that looking like Greece, where they just, deficit spend, government spend, and they just have to, every 10 years or whatever, just inflate away the currency because of all their welfare programs. Do you see it like that, or have you kind of thought about it?
Well, those places are the heartland of stupid and destructive ideas. These people really think that they can consume more than it's possible to consume more than they produce and survive that way. But they can only do so by stealing from people that actually do produce more than they consume. So it's going to come to an unhappy ending for them. And actually, since, look, we've seen the polls that say that over half of people under 18 believe in socialism and think socialism is better than capitalism. And the fact that it seems like all the major corporations and all the universities, all the NGOs, no exceptions there, and all members of the Democratic Party, they all support Black Lives Matter and socialism and welfare statism and collectivism. So that, we're on a slippery slope. We really are. I mean, yeah.
If we get to that point where there is a civil war, how do you think that would play out with inflation? Because if my memory serves me right, during the Civil War and World War II, obviously they've got to print a ton of money. And even in World War II, they had to peg the yield curve, which they might have to do now, even without the war. But I'm just thinking this year, we're at $4 trillion, $5 trillion, who knows, the deficit. And that's as much debt as we racked up in the first 220 years of the country. We'll spend that just this year alone. So if we go into a civil war type situation, that means even more money printing than we have right now. So what do you think that would do to the dollar?
Well, the fate of the dollar is sealed at this point. The massive deficits that Washington is running right now, if they don't run those deficits, what's going to happen is that the whole house of cards, yeah, financial structure, which is 100 stories high, is going to come crashing down. Yeah. So they painted themselves into a corner at this point, and there's no way out but to destroy the dollar. When you have all this debt, it cannot be paid off. It's impossible. 27, 28, 29 trillion, whatever it is right now, because more is being spent all the time, every single day. The curve has gone hyperbolic, and we've long passed the knee in that hyperbolic curve, so it's starting to go like this. All that debt is going to have to be inflated out of existence. And some people, we don't owe it to ourselves, which was a stupid saying that they used to use to justify it. Some people owe it to some other people. And it can't be repaid at this point. And it's why they have to keep printing up more money so that people can pay their debts. It's really sad. Incidentally, I advocate the abolition of the Federal Reserve System to start with. Money is a medium of exchange and a store of value. It shouldn't be a political football. And when you have a central bank, like the Federal Reserve, that prints up money with political motives, the people that get that money first and get to spend it at its old value and get it because they're powerful and they're standing closer to the fire hydrant that's spewing that money, that's why the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. So we've got a demographic, sociological disaster in the making here in the United States too. And the largest single culprit at this point is the Federal Reserve, which most people don't understand how it, what it is or what it, how it works, but they've been told it's a good thing that's guiding and tuning, fine tuning. Remember they used to say fine tuning? Nonsense. I mean, this. Listen, we're sitting on a time bomb that's about to explode. Forget about these idiots fine-tuning the economy.
Right. What do you think about the Fed coming out, or maybe the government in collaboration with the Fed, banning cash and then going to like a Fed coin, we'll call it, a government-backed digital currency. And then we all have accounts, bank accounts, just like primary dealer banks, with the Fed. So all they have to do is print bank reserves like they do now, and that goes directly into your account. So effectively what you're doing is you're turning bank reserves into legal tender. And then everyone, you know, to get their stimulus check, let's say, or their universal basic income, they download the Fed app on their phone, and that's what gives you the account. And then where I see this going, if that happens, which I think is likely, now, it's a matter of when. I know it might not happen tomorrow, but maybe 5 years, 10 years. But when this does happen, then it gives the Fed or the government the ability to create that inflation that they need to bail themselves out, because they could, I don't want to call it fine tune, but they could really mess with velocity, because they could say, listen, Doug, we're going to give every American $5,000 a month. It's their freedom dividend just for being an American. But you've got to spend it in the next 15 days. And if you don't spend it, we just zap, it's gone off your freedom app. That's how they get velocity going, or they take rates negative. What do you think about that?
Oh, I have no doubt. Look, the prime directive of all living things, whether it's an amoeba or a corporation, an individual, a government, is survive. And at this point, the only way that the current financial system can survive is by these people grabbing the economy around the neck in a stranglehold. And that's what they're doing. And this idea of, and I'm not sure, but I think I might be the person that coined that term FedCoin. I did a video with my publisher about 5 years ago where we were talking about this possibility, and I coined that word FedCoin. But anyway, the idea is this. You already are not going to have any of these nickels, dimes, and quarters, because it's uneconomic for them to print it, print them. And people don't even bother to pick up a quarter. It's not even, you can't buy anything with a quarter anymore. So the coinage, they're not actually coins, they're tokens. Coins, technically speaking, are made of a metal that has value. Tokens are just like wooden nickels, and that's what the coins that we have in our pockets are today. So they're going out the window, and cash is going out the window soon. $100 bills first, because they'll say, oh, money launderers and drug dealers and tax evaders and horrible people. And none of those things are horrible people. That's a separate discussion. But they can all use them. But cash gives you freedom. It's private. The money that they want to replace it with, which is money that you're going to have to use on your smartphone, they'll know exactly how much you have and what you're spending and where you're spending it on. And they can add $1,000 for some type of a program, or they can debit you $1,000 if they want to, if they think that that's in the national interest, which is a horrible phrase that they like to use. So yes, that's coming. And it already exists as a practical matter, not a legal matter, but a practical matter in both Sweden and China. They're both using digital money. but it is a disaster from a personal freedom point of view, because everything that you want to have and provide for yourself and others, places you want to go, it's represented by money. And if the money is arbitrary and political and can disappear, it means you have no personal freedom. What are you going to do if you had zero money? Where are you going to go?
Right.
You're going to eat and sleep and live wherever you're told at that point. You have no control over your own life. So this whole thing of money is of critical importance to somebody that wants to be a free human being.
Yeah. You know what I've been thinking about the last couple of weeks, and I'd love to get your opinion on this. I was thinking through, if we all have an account with the Fed, they can see, to your point, every single transaction. So we're talking about potentially billions of transactions on a daily basis with every single American spending, buying, selling, doing whatever. And I thought, well, if I tried to put myself in the mind of a central planner, and I know that's very difficult to do. Don't even go there. But if you are, if you figured that the reason, maybe in their mind, that Marxism failed in Russia is because, or one of the big reasons, because they didn't have price discovery. So they couldn't figure out how to efficiently allocate scarce resources with alternative uses. But do you think that they could say, okay, we've got all of this data that's being generated by all these transactions, because we now have records of every single American, what they're doing daily, and the businesses for that matter. Do you think they might try to take AI, artificial intelligence, and create some sort of algorithm to where they plug that into this big data, and then all of a sudden they've solved the problem of no price discovery? So now we don't need free market capitalism anymore. We can just use big data and AI to take us to this socialist utopia.
Look, who knows what kind of cockamamie schemes these people are going to come up with. It's one thing after another with these people. But the real problem is that you have two types of people in the world. You've got people that are interested in controlling the material universe, building stuff. And then you've got people that are interested in controlling other people. And that's the kind of person that goes into the government. And they come up with these schemes because they like power and they like controlling other people. So the people that populate Washington, D.C. and live inside the Beltway, or for that matter, on a mini level, your local city councilors or county commissioners, they're all people that like to control other people. That's why they get into politics. So sure, they're going to come up with all kinds of goofy ideas like this. But every time they do, and every time these people in the legislature sit there, and they sit there most of the year passing laws, all of those laws, people, these idiots that you vote for, are telling you what you must do and what you must not do. It's all unnecessary and stupid and degraded. So
I'm of the opinion, I first heard Milton Friedman say this, the problem with centralizing power in government is that sooner or later you're going to get someone there that is a Mussolini or a Stalin, because they're attracted to that power, exactly what you were saying. And my thing is, that's why we should want limited government, because it brings in people that are maybe morally have a North Star there, where the guys or gals we have there now, they're just morally bankrupt. So have you seen government become bigger and bigger and bigger since the 1970s? If so, have you seen the typical politician become worse and worse and worse?
Well, George, I've been to 160 different countries, most of them several times, numerous times. I've lived in 10. And I've looked at the political situation in all of these places. And look, people go into government because they either want money or power. In the third world, it's about both. But we're becoming a third world country, floating on its laurels. I mean, Adam Smith said, it takes it takes a lifetime to destroy you can't destroy a country overnight. It takes a long time to waste the capital that's been accumulated by many generations in the past that have accumulated this capital. But we're on the edge of doing that at this point. You know, I started writing a series of novels, starting with Speculator, which I think we talked about last time.
Yeah.
Drug Lord, where our hero becomes a drug lord. And I'm trying to reform that unjustly besmirched occupation. And we've just completed, you'll excuse the commercial.
No. Bring up the book.
This is Assassin, where our hero, Charles Knight, having just had another fortune stolen from him by the government and being put in the slammer for 2 years, which is an interesting story in itself, what happens to Charles in the book, decides there are some people that just need killing. They're just bad actors. And this is a very politically incorrect book. People will think when they see Assassin and know that the book's about political assassination, they'll think, oh, this must be about Trump. Well, it's not about Trump, although it's set in today's world, exactly. Mm. But I don't know what's to be done. The fact is that the horrible people that get into government, people like Mao and Hitler and Stalin and Pol Pot and all these people, ask yourself, why didn't somebody just shoot them or take them out in some other way? And this is what I discuss in this book. What is the morality of political assassination? Well, one of the techniques, but does it serve a useful purpose? Or is it really just like pulling out a shark's tooth, which is automatically replaced by another shark's tooth? So I hope people will pick this book up, which is on Amazon, because it's very, very relevant to what we're talking about. It gets down to the gut level, politics and the people that are in politics, and what do you do about it? Because we don't have a democracy in this country anymore. Not that a democracy, incidentally, is necessarily a good thing. I see a democracy basically as mob rule dressed up in a coat and tie. I'm not actually a big fan of democracy per se. I think there are better ways for society to be governed. But we're in for some really turbulent times.
You bring up your book, and it's a great point, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where if government just wasn't as powerful, we wouldn't have to worry about a Stalin, because even if you get some crazy that gets into government, they can't really do much because it doesn't have any power to begin with. And then we don't have to worry about lobbyists and all these things. So it just goes back to wanting limited government, small government. But of course, to your earlier point, it's an entity in and of itself, and government by nature just continues to want to survive and grow and grow and grow. So on that note, we're right in the middle of 2020 here, and we've had all of these lockdowns. And I know you spend most of your time in Argentina and Uruguay, but now I think you might be in the States, maybe in Aspen. So I'd love to get your take on what's going on with the lockdowns, how they compare with Argentina and South America. I was incidentally in lockdown in Medellin, so I've had the chance to kind of experience both. And where you think this takes us from a standpoint of personal freedom and liberty. My concern right off the bat with this whole COVID thing is that we'd go back to 9/11, and because of that one incident, it would take away our personal liberty, or some of them, forever. Now we've got the TSA. So with this, they're just taking it to such an extreme. They've crossed such a boundary, a line in the sand. Where is that going to take our personal liberty in the next decade or two decades?
This COVID lockdown, or I should say the hysteria, COVID itself is a relatively trivial medical problem as far as I can determine, just somewhat worse than the seasonal flu, which typically kills 30 to 60,000 people, and not even in remotely in the same ballpark as the Spanish flu of 1918.
Right.
So this is all about hysteria for a disease that really kills people, elderly people who are sick. The average age of people that die from it are He's 79, 80 years old. So this is all quite ridiculous. And to speak directly to what you said, it's that talk about what happened on 9/11. Sure, everybody was looking for a Mohammedan terrorist under every bed for a while. And the rules and the inconveniences and the stupidities they put into effect then are still with us.
Yeah.
So it's very likely that the same thing is going to be true when this COVID burns itself out the way viruses always do. And they're still going to be with us. Because the nice thing about a virus from the government's point of view is that you can't see it. It's like stalking you like a ghost. It's hidden. At least a Mohammedan terrorist, you can kind of, maybe you can see him. This is a total disaster. And I wonder what the next one is going to be. And undoubtedly they'll expand the CDC or some other agency. Now this is horrible, but it's worldwide. It's everywhere except in Sweden, which treated it as a non-event, and everything's normal in Sweden. They haven't damaged themselves the way we have. And in South America, all those governments are engaging in stupidity too. Uruguay is probably the mellowest of the South American countries that way, but all of them. There's a mask hysteria, there's social distancing hysteria, and it's destroying the bonds that bind society together. Now, here I am in Aspen at the moment, and I've been a member of two groups that are luncheon groups for many, many years, because I spend the northern summer here in Colorado. And I believe that those two luncheon groups, which have been around for decades, I think they're dead and gone, and they're not coming back. So that's a social bond, which has vanished.
Right.
I mean, even my Monday poker group has gone away, and I don't think it's coming back. So the long-term consequences of this COVID hysteria are immense, as big as the phony war on terror.
Yeah, so it's not just about personal liberty. It's about the social cohesion within society at large.
Yeah, it is. And another thing is that this is causing people to look to their government to save them, to protect them, which is exactly the opposite of where they should be looking. It's taking away personal responsibility from people, and that's being transferred to the state and the kind of people that work for the state. So no, this is a nightmare. I'm just wondering what's next.
Yeah, you know, I've been in the United States for the past couple months, and like you, I don't spend much time here, but I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, and I've noticed, just listen to the radio periodically, you'll hear like a Joe Biden ad, and every single one of them is about let the government protect you. The government needs to protect you. That we're here for your safety. You know, Donald Trump didn't keep you safe against COVID. We're going to keep you safe. And every time I hear that, it just goes right back to that Benjamin Franklin quote, you know, about trading personal freedom for a short-term or temporary safety is never, ever, ever a good bet long-term. Because
George, let me ask you, because you keep your finger on the pulse of things like this, who do you handicap to win on November 3rd or whenever that election is determined? I'm not saying who do you want to win.
I'd probably say Trump for the same reasons that he won last time. And I know he's way behind in the polls and no one admits to liking Trump, because I think the stigma attached to voting for Trump is even more severe than it was back, you know, in the last election. And now everything, to your earlier point, is so insanely politicized. I mean, it's to the point where I see not only if you're not wearing a mask, all of a sudden they put you in a category of being a right-wing Nazi. But it's gone from that just to if you're not wearing the mask over your nose entirely, then you're automatically put into one political group and you have to be this hateful person. And it's the same thing if you go into a supermarket and the person's wearing a mask and like a shield, then they're automatically seen as this lefty liberal that is just stupid and just over, you know, listens to CNN all the time in mainstream media. So you've got this divisiveness that it was bad back before, but you know, and what's interesting, you and I have the ability to leave for, let's say, a year at a time and then come back, where most Americans, it's like seeing yourself in the mirror every single day. You don't really notice those changes. But if you don't look in the mirror for 2 years, and all of a sudden you wake up and look and you say, my gosh, I've really aged. I've really changed. And I see the exact same thing when I come back to the United States, and when I just have, it's unbelievably divisive, like nothing I've ever seen in my life. And unfortunately, and I'd love to get your take on this too, I'm seeing such a divide where there's no more middle class, not just politically, but the middle class, as far as economically, just isn't there. I went to Las Vegas to meet a good buddy of mine, Robert Barnes, who's Alex Jones's lawyer, met him for dinner, and I was down on the strip where I've spent a lot of time in years past, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. All it is just the riffraff and people using drugs and a lot of homeless people. There was none of the upscale type of ambiance that you'd always associate with Las Vegas and some of the nicer hotels. So that's what I've seen on my end. And I don't see it ending well, unfortunately. And one thing I keep saying, I want to get your opinion on all these things, but another thing that came to mind when you were talking about the destruction of the economy from these central planners, it's so blatantly apparent. A lot of times I think it may be just the Cantillon effect. And the Cantillon effect, of course, is these central planners know they're the closest to the money printing, and therefore the money is going to go through their back pocket before it trickles down into the economy and creates inflation, whether through consumer price inflation or asset inflation, something like that. So they're going to have an increased purchasing power. So maybe they try to destroy the economy, but for your own safety, of course, they know that it'll enrich them through the Cantillon effect.
Yeah, this is really going to be ugly. And I call the economic aspect of this the Greater Depression, because it's going to be much worse and much longer lasting and much different than the unpleasantness of 1929 to 1946. And I placed a money bet in 2016 that Trump was going to win. Don't make that bet this time. And there are a number of reasons why I'm afraid that the Harris, because it's really Harris, not tired and demented old Joe Biden.
Exactly.
It's, you know, one of the most serious things is that everybody goes to college, and the colleges, the universities, are totally, totally captured. And I speak as somebody who's been a trustee of two separate colleges, that they've been totally captured by neo-Marxists and leftists of every stripe. And when a kid goes to college at 18, he's kind of got a tabula rasa and is easy to indoctrinate from authority figures.
Right.
So it's been 4 years since 2016 and four more cohorts of kids that are now highly politicized are going to be voting. Mm. So that's a lot of extra people. And the same is true in high schools. They're politicized too. So that is a reason why I think it's going to go the wrong way. But, you know, more than that, it's who's going to cheat best. Who's going to stuff the ballot boxes, whether they're mail-in or whether it's by electronic hacking. And the Democrats, coming from Chicago the way I do, it was a laughing matter there that the you know, Stalin was right. It's not who votes that counts. It's who counts the votes that counts. That's what we're going to see this time. And the Democrats are much more experienced and much more expert at this than the Republicans. So, and if the Democrats win, and I'm afraid they are, that they're going to cement themselves in office by Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia becoming states with four more senators. And there might be a constitutional convention where the Constitution, which is already a dead letter, will be altered. Bill of Rights goes away. Second Amendment, forget about it. First Amendment, forget about it. So we're really on a very, very dangerous slippery slope.
So what do you do, Doug? What do you do from an investment standpoint? Because I remember you saying so many times that your definition of a speculator is someone who takes advantage and profits from government stupidity. And so there's a lot of government stupidity right now. And if you're right about the election, we're going to get even more government stupidity. And I think Trump's just as bad, but just in different ways. So regardless of how the election plays out, a lot of government stupidity. So what do you do to take advantage of that if you're a Doug Casey type of crisis investing speculator?
Well, let's look at our alternatives. Stock market. Everybody's in the stock market today. It's in a bubble. And I wouldn't touch the stock market. I think it could go higher because they're going to be printing a lot more money, whether Trump or Biden, Harris, is in office. That's all they can do is print more money to keep the whole thing from collapsing. So yeah, the stock market could go higher. But I don't like to gamble. I like to speculate. So I'm out of the stock market. The bond market, well, that is a hyper bubble.
Yeah.
It's a triple threat to your capital. I mean, you've got the currency risk, the dollar's turning into toilet paper, I promise you. The interest rate risk, interest rates are at all-time lows. They're going back to all-time highs in the years to come. So that'll devastate bonds. And the default risk in this over-indebted world, you're going to have lots of, so don't touch bonds, dump them all tomorrow morning. Don't reach for yield like a lot of foolish people are doing. Real estate. Well, if you're in a small town, where you're not going to see BLM marches and so forth, where the people from New York and LA are escaping to. And incidentally, Aspen, which is archetypical of this, this is a people's republic, incidentally. I'm thinking I'm going to give up on Aspen after many years of living here because there are so many obnoxious people from the big cities that are moving here, obnoxious rich people, not obnoxious poor people. But small towns, that'll be okay. But real estate floats on a sea of debt. So it's easy to tax, and it's time to eat the rich, so it'll be taxed. So where do you go? Well, commodities are really cheap, but it's very hard to invest or speculate in commodities. Very specialized. What you've got to do is buy gold. I hate to recommend it at $1,900 an ounce because I've been buying it from $35 an ounce. But buy gold because it's the only financial asset that's not simultaneously somebody else's liability. But here's the tip. Here's the takeaway if people want to make money from this crisis. Right now, in both relative and absolute terms, gold stocks are about the cheapest in history. Every producing gold mine in the world has a company that produces gold currently. The market cap of these things is less than the cash that Apple alone has in its bank accounts. That's how cheap they are. There's only one gold stock on the S&P 500. They're very, very cheap, and they're coining money because the all-in sustaining cost, including replacing reserves, long story, we could have a whole show on just gold stocks, is about $1,000 an ounce. But gold is at 1900 and going much higher. And nobody owns these gold stocks. Fund managers have been poisoned against gold. They think it's a pet rock, but they're going to buy it. And so that's where people should put their money, not leave it in the bank or anything like that.
What do you think about gold compared to silver? Do you see them as the same asset class, or do you see them as serving a different purpose?
Same asset class, definitely. But you've got to remember that silver is primarily an industrial metal. And it's very interesting analyzing the differences between gold and silver. It's a much, much smaller market than gold. Look, there have been 6 billion ounces of gold mined since the dawn of history, as near as we can tell. It's a guesstimate, obviously. And they basically all exist. And the price of gold is determined not by new production. 80 million ounces of gold are produced every year, but that only adds about 1 to 1.3% to the total amount of gold in the world. Gold prices are determined by whether people want to hold it or not hold it. Silver is mainly an industrial metal, but it has monetary aspects. And since it's a much, much smaller market than gold, I mean, the gold-silver ratio right now, $2,500 to 19, that's about 60 to 1 or something like that. It's much more volatile than gold. So when a gold rush gets underway, which it will, lots of people are going to buy silver for lots of reasons, and it's got tremendous internal leverage. So yeah, I'm very friendly towards silver for lots of reasons. We're just skating on the surface of why.
Okay, so you're a fellow contrarian, and one thing I've looked at is the best stock in the entire market since 1968 is none other than Altria, the cigarette company. Mm-hmm. And the best performing sector since the mid-1990s is tobacco.
And which everybody is supposed to hate. Right, exactly.
Exactly, and they just pay such great dividends or such cash cows. You reinvest the dividends and compounded, you just make a ton of money over time. And I was just looking at the dividend the other day on Altria, and it was something around the neighborhood of 8%. So I wanted to get your take on if you see value potentially in tobacco because they're so unloved, and then the same thing would go for the coal stocks.
Yeah, and you could actually go down to the oil and gas stocks, which... Yeah. Are just a teeny weeny percentage of the market, which is on the other side. It's way too late to buy things like Google and Facebook and so forth. So yes, you're quite correct. If I wanted to be in the stock market, because these are also commodities, oil and gas, mm-hmm. and commodities in general are selling at or below the cost of production. So yes, I'd be there. I mean, right now is one of those times to be a gold bug. It's gold stocks are the most volatile class of stocks in the world. They're more volatile than tech stocks. But because they are, you don't want to be in them all the time. You just want to be in them sometimes. Now is one of those sometimes. But you're quite correct. I'm not so sure. I like oil and gas a lot. I think coal is very interesting because they're really in the toilet. Cheap. Altria and the tobacco stocks, I just don't know. And I speak as a cigar smoker, incidentally. Mm. So it's not like I'm ideologically opposed to them in any way. Interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's go ahead. I know we're running a little short on time. Let's talk about your most recent book and then International Man. I really want to suggest people going to that website because that's a website that I've learned a lot from since I got into this space in 2012, and then your new YouTube channel. So let's dive into the good stuff.
Well, only a month ago, I started a YouTube channel where every day, can't believe I'm doing it, you're a hero for doing it as long as you have. we take a subject, and it can be any subject under the sun, and we try to dig deeply into that subject. Everything from war and revolution to investing to the collapse of Western civilization to... Mm. aspects of history. It's that type of thing, okay? So go to Doug Casey's Takes. That's where we are. And that's all verbal video. And then my other thing is internationalman.com, which I do with a number of other people. And we have articles on international subjects, but a lot of others. It's a great blog site.
Yeah. And crisis investing, which is something I really enjoy. That's where I first learned about an opportunity in Cyprus that I took advantage of way back in, 2013 or so?
Although I got to say, I sold my interest in Casey Research a few years ago. And so I'm on my own doing different things now. But yeah, there's been some great stuff on crisis investing. And the last thing, of course, is that since there are many things that you can say in the form of fiction that you best not or even dare not say in the form of nonfiction,
right.
That's why I've gotten into the custom of writing novels. And this book, Assassin, was just published. And my lighting isn't too good where I moved to. It's on Amazon now. And I've been reading it as opposed to writing and editing. It's a hell of a good book because it talks about the morality and the techniques and the practicality of political assassination. So it's a very good book. But if you want to get into gold mining, you can go back to Speculator, which was published a couple of years ago. And anyway, these are really good novels. They're as exciting as Jack Reacher books or C.J. Box novels, this type of thing. But we've got a lot of information in this book. So this is my new avocation.
It's a great way that you can express yourself and your opinions on society at large without being kind of crucified by the mob. And I think it's just great. You've had such an incredible journey and a great career. And for people to be able to take advantage of your wisdom and experience, whether it's through this YouTube channel, website, or this book, is just a huge opportunity.
Well, George, I really appreciate talking to you and you're taking the time. And sometime after the election, maybe we can talk again and see if, and maybe play the Rolling Stones Street Fighting Man as kind of background music.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely talk soon, Doug. I appreciate your time. And man, I just cannot wait to do it again. The good thing about what's going on in the world today is we're never short on things to talk about.
No, as long as they let us continue talking about it, which is very much in question, depending on who wins.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Doug, enjoy your day, buddy.
Thanks, George. See you later.